All right, everybody, good evening to you. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Just a couple of ticks after midnight, now on the 6th of November, 2007, and it's time to say hello to our guest for the evening. Her name is Elizabeth Upton, and Elizabeth is an award-winning independent documentary filmmaker. She's directed, produced, edited, and filmed feature-length documentaries, shorts, many different projects, worked across the U.S. in Romania, in Guatemala, Honduras, Mexico, and she's also a very talented photographer and doing lots of creative things in general. I was introduced to her by our good friend John Major Jenkins, and I'm glad that I was, because we're going to have a chance to talk with her about her life and her work beginning right now as we say hello and welcome to Radio Orbit. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello. Hi.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on the show.
Well, we're excited to have you here, and having a little bit of technical difficulty with the internet side of things tonight, but we've got certainly plenty of people around town and in the central Missouri here area that are listening to the program as they always do, and we'll just continue right along, all right?
Wonderful. Well, hello to everyone, and glad to be here and connect in and share this information. There's some things that I haven't even shared on the air before that I'll be sharing tonight. So I'm very excited to be here and to meet new people as we're on this radio program here.
All right. Well, let's. I think first off, let me give you a website. It's simply your name, Elizabeth Upton, U-P-T-O-N, ElizabethUpton.com. Lots of information about what Elizabeth is doing and what she has been doing. Over there at her website. You can link over there directly from my site. But I think the best way to get things going, Elizabeth, is maybe just you can tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with some of the things that we're going to be talking about tonight and just where you come from.
Well, let's see. I've been working and filming for the last 8 years, traveling around, and it's very important to bring forward a consciousness message as there is so much out there to share. And also to help people, if at all possible. Work that I've done in Romania was to help the orphans there, and we raised a lot of money for them. And when they're out on the street, we were able to get facilities for them, because when they're 18, they don't have a place to go. So we were able to raise money to buy places for them to go and provide them with families and with facilities and supplies, and just allow them to explore through art a different avenue than they were using in the orphanage, and provide them with inspiration. Because when these children, these orphans ages 13 to 18, they realize that they could draw, and they're drawing like Michelangelo. I mean, these kids are absolutely phenomenal. And all of a sudden they had another reason to live, basically, and they were able to explore that part of their brain, and they suddenly wanted to do well in school, because they knew that they could potentially get a scholarship, and it gave them other avenues that they didn't have, because the employment rate is very low, and you know, you're in an orphanage and you don't have a huge support system, and so suddenly they were able to see a different part within them that they were able to utilize, and they suddenly had a family and people to unite with. So that was an amazing journey going through there, and I had my first international screening through that piece.
When were you in Romania?
In 2002.
We were there. So 5 years ago. Okay.
Yeah. So, and my father had previously gone to Romania and done work to help the orphans. He's done humanitarian work and was on 2020 six different times. And so I also go into the history of that when I was a child, because here there were orphans coming into our home and I was taking care of them. And I didn't know where Romania was at that point at that time. So, you know, it was something that was embedded in my consciousness and in my being. And so 10 years later, I was able to go back and do a program that was going on and also investigating things that had gone on in the past. And so it was a real full circle, and it was an honor to be there, and it was very difficult to leave the children. You know, it was pulling at my heartstrings all levels.
I'm sure.
But to bring information and to share that, as I said, it was the first international screening, and that was the first award that I won, and just the outreach and people stepping in and helping is just such a beautiful thing. So through the medium of documentary, there's so many levels that you can touch and bring to life. So it's very exciting to be able to do that.
I have to ask you, I got an email earlier today, and someone said, ask Elizabeth if her father was Pat Upton, the guitar player for Spiral Staircase. because he was from the same part of California. And I thought, and since you just mentioned your dad, I thought, well, okay, I might as well ask her.
Actually, it's not. My father's name is John Upton.
Okay, all right.
But he played a little bit of guitar, although his name wasn't Pat.
All right.
Tell
me a little bit about where you're from originally. Where do you come from?
I'm from San Diego, born and raised originally. Lived there for the first 18 years of my life. But blessed be through my grandmother and grandfather, I was able to travel a lot. So at a young age, I was exposed to a lot more rather than just kind of being in San Diego, although San Diego is a beautiful place to be.
Sure.
But first 18 years was basically in San Diego. And then after that, I went to UC Davis, traveled north a bit, and studied film and anthropology at UC Davis, and I helped create the film major there. They didn't have one when I enrolled, and so I was able to go to UC San Diego and check out their media department, and that's actually where I shot my first documentary. I was able to utilize the equipment and the tools that they had, and I had a team standing by to work with, and directed my first piece, which, you know, it's like your first baby. So
right.
That's where I had my first baby, basically. and then was able to go back to UC Davis and then help them create a film major there, knowing basically what it took to achieve the ultimate goal of having a film program there at Davis. So it was nice. I worked through educational and information technology, so I helped train different professors to use different software technologies to incorporate that into their curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
So through that, I was able to also set up an editing bay for students and kind of connect in classes that were interdispersed throughout different departments. So it was exciting because I would take a class in history and a class in English and then a class in Spanish studies, and then I would, you know, connect the dots as they were incorporating film studies and then write my own major. So now they officially have one at UC Davis, and when I went back and walked down the hallway and saw film studies up there, I smiled inside. It was really exciting.
That's awesome.
See that happen there. So
no doubt. All right.
Yeah.
Let's talk. I think the first film that I'd like to talk to you about that I'm interested in is this one that you created that's called Echo Geomorphology.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we
can
talk about, because this is a topic that we could probably talk about for 2 hours in and of itself. But
sure.
But let's do that for a little while, because I think it's a good springboard to go into some of these other things.
Yeah. It was a great piece, and people love to say the title because they're always like, "Am I pronouncing that right?"
Echo geomorphology.
You know, it's a mouthful, but it's actually a course that is through UC Davis, and after I graduated, given my work and reputation in the film department, I was referred by the dean to be commissioned to do this piece. So it was actually UC Davis that hired me to do this, which was really exciting after graduating and writing so many checks to the dean's, you know, the dean's office. They're actually writing me a check back, so that was exciting.
Nice.
But ecogeomorphology is a combination of ecology, geology, and biology.
Mm.
And students through UC Davis had to apply to be part of this course, where they were all senior students, and it was an opportunity to connect on different levels, an interdisciplinary way, where maybe a fish biologist only talks to another fish biologist,
right.
But in this case, they're able to talk to people that are studying the sediment or, you know, the trout, the native, non-native, invasive species, to connect in with other scientists on different levels, which is really the way of the future, because it used to be so specific that it was, you know, you worked in your little corner and you worked in your little corner, but now, today, there's so much going on, and there's cross dialogue going on. And so this course was really an example of that. And Professor Jeff Mount, the one of the main heads in the geology department, is an amazing guy, amazing scholar, and has done so much for so many people. I was able to work closely with him and to talk to these different students that were in his course, where then went to the Grand Canyon and traveled through the Grand Canyon, and they were able to actually do work in the field. So instead of just sitting in a classroom and learning about things, what they did was they absorbed the existing literature and they read it, and, you know, what happened in 1974 with the sediment, or what about the presence of the Glen Canyon Dam? I mean, all of these different things. They were able to study the existing literature, and then they got to go in the field and actually do the research, and then they published that on the web. And so this was just a comprehensive, shorter piece that followed them and explored that concept, and hopefully the goal is to get other courses like this going at other universities so students are able to connect in on different levels. And being an anthropology student and scholar, and I absolutely love anthropology, I would have loved to have had that opportunity, you know, my senior year to study a culture, be it, you know, maybe go to Aboriginal Australia, study Gugu Yimadir, and then I'm actually going there and actually doing the research. So
right.
So it's an amazing course for students, and it was an amazing documentary and piece to be a part of, and the students were just phenomenal, just so intelligent and really, really in tune with what they were working on. So it was a great piece, and won an award for that at the UC Berkeley Film Festival there for education.
And was that, how long was that particular film?
The piece, the final piece was 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a shorter piece. That I believe the one that I did for the university was about 30 minutes, and then I cut it down to about 20,
mm-hmm.
you know, for it to be the way that I would feel. I mean, you want to include everyone and everything, but there's certain things that I cut down and made it a lot tighter, and it's a lot more enticing. It moves a bit better.
Is that can people get a look at these? I know that you have some of, at least clips of some of your stuff up on the web. How can people get a look at some of your work?
Yeah, at this point, people can send me an email and let me know. I've actually had a lot of people, even through MySpace, people have said, hey, you know, how do I get a copy of this? Or I adopted a Romanian boy, I'd love to see this. And, you know, so if you send me an email at this point, we're also working on a huge website that's going to have all of the information there, and it's just a matter of time to get everything up there so people can actually click and go through PayPal and do all those various things, but at this point, people can send me an email directly, and we can work out all the specifics.
All right, no problem. And your contact information is available right there on the website.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, one more time, everybody. That's Elizabeth Upton, Elizabethupton, ElizabethUpton.com. All right. Okay. Tell me a story about your trip in the Grand Canyon. You were there for 9 or 10 days, and that got edited down to 30 minutes. There had to be some amazing things that happened during that trip.
Well, yeah, there was a lot that went on, and, you know, surprisingly enough, there was other people that were filming during the Grand Canyon journey. I was able to orchestrate the whole, but in the last minute, there was a problem with the space, and there was only a certain amount of people that they're allowed on the rafts, and they're very, very serious about how many people get on the rafts. So I wasn't able to actually go. It was actually a bummer and somewhat last minute. And then later, like the first day, someone got hurt and had to be airlifted out. So, you know, it was kind of frustrating, but at the same time, I was able to direct the people that were there and say, hey, you know, hold the camera like this, and if you can, get shots like this, and you know, be very steady, and any time you can use a tripod. And so I did this kind of filmmakers 101 for them and ran through it, and you know, they did a good job, and I'm a great editor, so I was able to really work with the material. But that was the only thing. I wasn't able to actually go into the Grand Canyon.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. But all of the shots, all of the students, when you see it, all the students on campus at UC Davis and everything, I did all of that ahead of time, so I was able to just intercut bits and pieces. And I think had I gone, it would have been a lot longer. That's why it only ended up being about 20 minutes.
Okay. You're interested in photography, and you write some poetry, and you have actually some visual art as well. Just a creative by nature?
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, I've always been an artist. I've always loved to write and to draw. You know, I would sit in class and doodle. And I have always loved photography. I've always incorporated that in my life. I've always loved to dance. I love music. You know, it's just always, it's a part of who I am. It's a part of my makeup. And it's interesting because you seem to kind of shift in a way from different medium to medium. Mm-hmm. So you can see, you know, on my site, you can see pieces that I've done in charcoal and graphite and poetry that I've written and photography that I've taken. But it seems to be in somewhat, you know, segments of life that go through, and it evolves into, you know, that next medium, which at this point everything has evolved into my documentary filmmaking. So it's exciting because there's so many levels to the medium. It's basically like painting, you know, and each layer, instead of just with paint, you're able to use music, you're painting with rhythm, you're painting with education, you're painting with poetry, you're painting, you know, with amazing scholars and experts, you're painting with beautiful photography and movement through the mountains and of the archaeological sites. I mean, it's all a bunch of layers, and my favorite point is when I have the blank canvas in front of me, and in Final Cut Pro, you know, they aptly call it the canvas. That's when you have the part where you create. And so to me, I mean, filmmaking, and especially documentary filmmaking, I really find so many layers that are very similar to painting. Now, I would love to have a little more time that I could actually just sit and draw, or just sit and paint, or sit and write. But, you know, it's kind of, you have to somewhat choose between when and how you do things. And so right now, the medium of documentary is at the forefront.
Right.
But I also played the piano, and, you know, I love the arts, every single part of them.
Were your parents or your grandparents, you mentioned you spent a lot of time with them, were they creative people?
Yeah, my whole family is creative. In fact, my brothers are amazing musicians.
Really? Absolutely. You mentioned that to me, actually, off the air, yeah.
Yeah, they are so amazing. My brother Johnny plays the drums, and, I mean, basically every other instrument. He just seems to be a genius in the drums. But he also just has a breadth of knowledge about music and artists. And then my younger brother, James, he is phenomenal on the guitar. And I don't say this just because they're my brothers. I mean, they are so talented. James is a genius. He's like a Jimi Hendrix on the guitar. You know, he actually just finished composing for a Greek tragedy that they put on at his school. He's in high school, he's 17, and, you know, he's composing, and then he was playing the guitar on top of the music that he composed.
Awesome.
So it definitely runs in the family. My grandfather is an amazing painter, absolutely phenomenal. It just, the list goes on and on, so I'm just grateful to be here and to share through art. You know, thank God that we have it.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. And, I mean, the arts have always been sort of what defines society and culture. But these days, in fact, I'll ask you a question about it, because the effect of technology is just unmistakable now, and you can't get away from it. I was going to ask you at some point how technology has affected the work that you do. I know, you know, for a fact that, you know, to make a film like many of the things that you do, it wasn't that long ago where you needed a whole crew, you know, to carry the stuff and all. I mean, it's amazing just the miniaturization of the technology where, you know, you can carry an HD camera around with you and you really can do your thing sort of by yourself.
Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely wonderful with, through technology, being afforded the freedom of being able to go out and to do this and to film, you know, in the highlands of Guatemala and not be intrusive. And also the cost is a lot less than it would be if I were filming, you know, on 35 millimeter, even 16 millimeter.
Oh my gosh.
The cost just to get the film produced. I mean, it's
and editing this whole bit, you mentioned Final Cut Pro.
Yeah.
This is a fancy software, right? But
oh yeah.
But I mean, digital editing
not...
is just done. I mean, I use digital editing, of course, in, you know, for audio when I do the radio thing. And so I'm familiar with it on that end, but of course the videos, I'm sure, are similar. But what it's done for audio production, you know, is literally, you know, a paradigm shift completely. So I'm assuming that it did a similar thing in video.
Yeah, I hear about, you know, Luis Buñuel cutting the film on his kitchen table as he's, you know, putting everything together, and
yeah, there's a reason they called it cutting.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
People don't realize that.
Literal,
people are actually cutting film and then pasting it together.
It's amazing. I mean, I really couldn't imagine just going through each frame the way that it used to be.
Yeah, it really is amazing.
It is amazing how quickly, you know, we can go through film. And although it's seemingly arduous because there's so many tapes and there's so much cataloging and you have external hard drives all over the place, and, you know, but I mean, I couldn't imagine how it was done, you know, back before we have everything that we do now. And it's a blessing, really, because, you know, first of all, I don't have to have millions of dollars to go out and film. And second of all, as you said, I don't have to have a huge crew. Or also with the studio systems, it's changing completely with the Internet. People are able to release online instead of having to go into a big theater or being part of the big five. You know, it's a completely different system now, and things are showing up that they're able to distribute online, and there's so many other ways of connecting to a global audience than there was before.
I think we should talk about that a little bit more, because listeners to this program are familiar with they're familiar for the most part with the audio side of this, because there's a similar phenomenon that's happening in the music world. You know, the large, big label record companies that used to run the show and make all the rules are now sort of running for their lives in a certain way, because the ability for artists to share their art and do it in creative ways sort of much more independently than they could before, is really changing the landscape of that particular industry. You mentioned a similar thing, apparently, in filmmaking. I guess the web is having the same effect?
Oh, yeah, very much so. Very much so.
For example, if you wanted to do a documentary, you know, I don't know, 10 or 20 years ago, it was a huge undertaking?
Yeah, it was. It was a huge undertaking. I mean, it still is a huge undertaking, but to the extent that it doesn't cost as much, and the technology is a lot smaller. But yeah, I mean, it takes a lot of passion. It takes a lot of heart.
Right.
You know, it takes a lot to go out and to do the things that a lot of documentary filmmakers have done. But even now, I think it's beautiful, because to me, the work is not going in there and being intrusive and with lighting and with all of these things, you know, not being in somebody's face.
Right.
I think is very important, and to their credit, I think maybe in the past that wasn't even an option. So now we're able to get more up close and personal, and a more natural environment of filming. So people can really see how things are going. Let's say if you're filming a sacred ritual going on in the highlands of Guatemala, you know, you don't want to be running around there with a huge light and a bunch of people and, you know, a guy with cables and, you know, all of those things. that's not going to be permitted in a sacred ritual. That's not okay. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of those things were not recorded. But now people, given the rapport, and this brings in a lot of anthropology as well, you know, having access and developing that respect and letting people know who you are and that you're not coming in there to exploit them. You know, there's a lot of those issues on the table. But once you develop that relationship and that respect and you're understood, then you can go into that situation in a different way, and you're not in their face, and you're allowing them the space to do what they're going to do, and they're allowing you the space to do what you're going to do and to share that with the world. And now a lot of cultures are really opening up to that idea. And you know, not only does it have to do with the universe and things that are shifting, but I think a lot of it has to do with the technology that we have and the opportunity to go in there and not be in everybody's face.
Right. So you can, there's a comfort level that people can remain at that allows them to maybe function in a more authentic manner.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we don't need these big, long telephoto lenses to get a good shot.
Right.
If you're doing still photography, now with the digital cameras, I mean, I have a little, it's a 10 megapixel camera. It's an amazing camera. And you look at it and you'd never know that it can produce these, you know, raw files that I could actually blow up to be as big as a billboard.
Right.
You know, but yeah. I don't have this huge thing and I'm, you know, sitting there in someone's face. So, and I wouldn't want someone to be, you know, in my face when I'm having a sacred ceremony or you know.
Well, sure. I mean, the whole idea is fly on the wall. You know, you want to be as subtle as possible, I imagine, if you're a filmmaker, and you want to be as out of the way and be able to catch the authenticity as much as you can.
Right, right. And that's what the poem, my conundrum, my digital conundrum on there, that's what that is all about. I was excited to see that you put that up there originally because, you know, I wrote that with everything that we're talking about in mind, so.
Well, maybe later in the program I might have to read that. So,
okay.
We'll see. Okay, before we talk any more about specifics, because I do want to talk about some of your projects, and I want to spend probably, maybe at the top of the hour, we'll start talking about your new film, because I think that's one that's really interesting. But we've got, we'll take a break here in a few minutes, but before we do that, tell me a little bit more about the technology that's involved. You use just a camera, or I mean, are there microphones involved, and how technical does it really get when you're out there in the field?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question because I don't think enough people ask that question. In fact, when I see, you know, the making of on DVDs, the special features, when I see them doing those types of shows, they never really talk about the technology or the shots or what it took to get that shot.
Yeah, I'm very interested in how you do it.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, and I'm curious why people don't talk about it more. Maybe it's because it's like the secret behind how it was made. You know, people always talk about the content, but to me, I'm always interested in what it took to get the content, in addition to the content. But for me, what I have, I mean, I don't have a huge studio by any means. I have my Sony DVX 2000, and I've brought that all over the world. And in the picture that you have on the website, you can see me holding that.
I figured that was it's like a gunslinger and his you know and his weapon. Or so. That's actually a bad analogy because I don't.
It is a bad analogy.
But I mean,
more
it's
like
light
a cradle
that.
For my baby.
Yeah,
really.
or like. Like your best friend or something, you know?
Yeah, well, to go off on a subtle tangent, it's really like a staff, basically. Mm. It's a modern-day staff. It's a way of being able to share the information. It's not really like shot at someone in a way to take away. It's a way to give back. It's another eye.
Mm.
It's something that is able to record and share that information for history's time forward.
That's a great way to look at it.
That's to me, you know, is the way to approach it. And I have a friend who's a filmmaker who was out in Peru filming, and he was there with a lot of sacred people that were doing sacred sites, and he was sitting there with this shaman type person, and this shaman was giving blessings to everyone that was sitting around, and my friend sat there and thought, you know, I really would love him to bless my camera. And he just thought of it in his mind. And the shaman heard him telepathically, heard what he had said, and he motioned for him to get up. And he got up with the camera, and the shaman spent a lot of time blessing his camera. And it really is a great example. When he told me that, I just got a big smile on my face, because it is the staff, and it should be blessed and looked at as so. And especially in the work that we do, I think it's important to note that. So carrying it like that, you know, it's like I'm always taking care of it. It's not just a piece of equipment. It's not just, you know, something drips on it and I leave it there. And I'm sure not all people are like this. Maybe, you know, other people are just, you know, here, there, at the camera, whatever it is, and that's okay too. But for me, with the information and with, you know, with the blessing of even having that technology, it requires respect. It requires taking care of it. It requires, you know, loving it, basically.
I love it. I think that's a great way to approach it, because it is your tool, your vehicle to share all this stuff with the rest of the world. And maybe the shaman recognized that too, and in your friend, and said, well, look, I know this is a powerful tool, and it can be used for this, that, or the other thing. I'm going to give it my best thoughts to let it be used for something that benefits, perhaps, you know?
Exactly. So that's my camera that I carry all over the world, and I shot that piece in Romania with it.
How many batteries you got?
Oh, I have about seven of them, and some that have gone out, and others beyond. But I'm looking at it right here. I have it right here. I love it. And I began shooting this piece I'm working on 4 years ago. And that was before the big HD shift and everything. Mm-hmm. So I decided that I really wanted to stay with the same medium, and I wanted to stay with the same format throughout this piece for as long as it takes. So the next piece that I'll do, I will be getting another camera, and it will be in HD format. Okay. But there's so many incompatibilities with HD right now. It's such a new technology that there's all these cross-platforming issues, and there's a frame rate difference, and there's all these things that I'm hearing other filmmakers talk about that are frustrating. So I figure, you know, when I'm actually done with this and get back in, there should be a lot of those things hammered out. You know, it's the same with any technology.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I have my camera, and I have my microphone. I have two microphones, and, you know, just a shotgun mic, and there's also a mount that I can put it on top of the camera, but I usually don't do that. I usually have my mic either on a little tripod or, you know, it depends on what I'm shooting, but I have my mics. I also have a wireless lav, so if I'm filming in a, like a convention setting, and, you know, one of the presenters is up there, I can give them the lav, and I can be all the way in the back of the room, and I can still pick up their sound without having to plug into the main soundboard, or, you know, depending on the setup, it all varies. Let's see, what else? I, you know, obviously have my tripod, and, you know, being a woman, I don't carry around, I don't have these huge, heavy tripods like a lot of people do, and I think that it would be fun to have that. I am looking for, you know, someone big and buff to carry everything around for me.
And then I'll
get one of the big, you know, big, heavy tripods. But, you know, this tripod and the other one that I have, they work just beautifully. I have this great travel bag that I have everything in. We have two of them. We were pulling all over Guatemala, up and down everywhere. So it wasn't, you know, it was definitely heavy to bring everything out. I also have lights and batteries for the lights, and the batteries are heavier than anything. Let's see. I mean, that's about it, with the exception of cables and tons of tape.
That's
really, you know, what I carry with me all the time. And I also have this little bag that I got when I was in Romania, and it's perfect. It's this perfect little bag, and you would think that it was just meant for my camera, and I found it, and I can put my camera in there, and it doesn't look like I have a camera at all.
Ah, that's good.
I can go in and somewhat be incognito if I need to be. And, you know, as a woman, they look at me and I have a purse and, you know, they don't even think twice. So.
All right, look, that's a good place to take a little break, okay?
All right.
All right, let's do it. We'll come back in just a moment, everybody, with Elizabeth Upton. And we'll talk more with Elizabeth for the next hour and a half about some of the projects that she's been involved with over the last few years and some of the things that are on the radar for the future, okay? All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It is about 11... Oh, I take it back. It's about... Let me get it right. First I say 11 and then 1. It's in between. It's 12:30 or so, 12:35 in AM now on the 6th of November, 2007. And we will hear a song from my friend Ruth and her band Rutherford. This one is called Happiness. And here's to it. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. All right, that's a song called Happiness. And that's Ruth Acuff and Jeff Mueller, commonly known around these parts as the band Rutherford. Great stuff. I saw Ruth and Jeff and their new drummer on, I guess it was Thursday night of last week, the 1st of November. It was my friend Lara's birthday, and great music coming from that band, and great to hear it. Okay, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, on the web, kopn.org. My guest tonight is Elizabeth Upton. She's a wonderful filmmaker and an artist and a photographer and just an interesting woman to have a chat with. So we're going to continue right now and say, hi, Elizabeth.
Hello again.
Thank you for sticking around with us. Where are you at? You're in Southern California still right now?
Yeah, I'm in Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles. That's where you make your home these days?
That's where I make my home these days. After 3.5 years traveling on the road, I have a home now in L.A., so it's
I used to hang out in Silver Lake.
Okay, well, I live in Los Feliz, so I'm right next door.
Yeah, I know exactly where it's at. That's a wonderful part of the city, actually, I think.
Yeah, it's great. I get to walk everywhere, and I really love that, and a rarity, I'm told, that's hard to find in L.A. Most people drive everywhere, but I love where we live, and I'm able to walk to my Nature Mart, and I have everything really close by. There's a post office and the 95-year-old Keymaker around the corner.
Right on.
You know, they have a theater in my backyard, so so it's a beautiful place to be.
All right. A question about subject matter. How you film some interesting things, and you're interested in some subjects that I find fascinating as well, but just on a personal note, how do you decide what you're going to do?
Well, I guess you could say that these things find me. I don't go out and actively seek what I will be doing, and even more so in present time, you know, with this last piece I've been doing, it really found me. I had no idea about, you know, when we go into the depths of the documentary I'm working on now, Sacred Geometry, you know, I had no idea what Sacred Geometry is, and it just came to me, and we can go into that later. But other pieces, you know, they have, like, the piece in Romania, you know, that has a deeper personal tie to it. I mean, as we said before, my father went to Romania. I knew a lot about the situation with the orphans over there. So that was something deeper that was tied in personally, and so going there to cover a different program was exciting. It was actually a woman that got a hold of my dad because of the work that he had done. So she got a hold of him and said, you know, I have this other program, and da-da-da, and then, you know, next thing you know, things are going. She said she wanted to do a documentary about it, and he said, well, I got the girl to do the documentary, you know, so... Okay, here we're flying to Romania. So, you know, they all have their own special story and their own special significance. So there isn't really one full answer for all of them. But, you know, the first one I shot was all about the basketball courts in Laguna Beach. There's these courts.
The outside ones, yeah.
They're right on the ocean. They're absolutely beautiful. The location is a character in itself. But I've been going down there since I was a little girl, and I played basketball my whole life. And, you know, there's all these amazing ballers that go down there and play. And, you know, it's like a life. It's a lifestyle down there. And they used to run these tournaments in the 70s. And so it was exciting to go there and to do my first documentary there and to kind of highlight five people's stories that were there on the court and their families. And
how cool.
This fellow that I had been watching since I was a little girl, we used to call him the Crier, and he used to just bitch and moan and gripe and cry and say, you know, well, he didn't really cry, he would just yell and scream, but, you know, it was always, you know, that wasn't a foul, you traveled, and, you know, he'd just get all into it. But, you know, here I go back 8 years later, and he's still there, and turns out his name is Don. So we got Dom on there, and it was really an exciting piece, and also explored the tournaments that they used to run down there. And, you know, you have people like Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson, and, you know, all these people that go down there and know those courts well. So that was a really fun piece, and that was the first piece I ever did, and it was done so early on that I have the final format on VHS.
Amazing. I was going to ask, what was your first experience with a camera? When did you start filming? I mean, some people that have stories like yours say, oh, well, God, when I was 4 years old, my dad bought me my first little thing. And, I mean, do you have a story that goes way back like that?
Well, I would say the first time that I really, you know, got involved was just production-wise, was just seeing. I mean, as a little girl, I was always wondering what was going on behind the scenes. I was always wondering, you know, how they got that shot, and I wanted to know.
Just in movies that you were watching, or
in movies that I was watching, uh-huh. I wanted to know what was going on behind the camera. It was always
that's amazing.
Some
I mean, that's
interest.
That amazes me, because I think that the great majority of people that watch a film think very little about exactly that.
That was what really intrigued me. Whenever they would do like a behind-the-scenes special on something,
right.
You know, I was like, oh, yes, behind the scenes, there we go.
Right.
You know, so, and I remember sitting and watching Hitchcock with my dad.
Oh, God.
And, you know, he would mention, you know, oh, did you see the boom come in the shot? And I'd, what? You know, and then he'd rewind it and he'd show me where the microphone just kind of went in a little bit on the top, you know, and
uh-huh.
I'd go, oh, wow, you know, so. Or I would think about how, you know, are they sitting in a car, you know, driving, and they're on the back of a truck and they're zooming in while they're driving forward. I mean, you know, that effect that Hitchcock did on Vertigo was actually
right.
a tracking shot, and then he was zooming out at the same time, so it created that feeling of being dizzy because they were moving forward and zooming backwards at the
same time. He was brilliant.
Oh, yeah,
oh,
absolutely.
Man.
So.
I mean, I'm certainly not the first one to say that, but I certainly feel it when I see those films. I go, oh, my God, you know, how do they do that?
Oh, yeah. He was revolutionary, no doubt. And, you know, so as a kid and everything, I loved that. But, you know, actually working with a camera wasn't up until later. I mean, I had, like, a little Hi-8 camera, you know, that I would have fun with, but... you know, professionally, I was able to watch other people because I did a lot of work young on with PBS. We were able to help for foster care. We did a series there that helped children through foster care, and because my dad is a filmmaker, so I've seen him in working on things. He's actually won an Emmy,
mm-hmm.
and he's done a lot of work. So that was kind of, you know, involved in my life as I grew up,
uh-huh.
and then. I was able to do things with him. I took independent study for video and film, so I was able to leave campus and go and do other work. And we shot one on 16mm and hired actors to do reenactment scenes and shot on location. So I was able to see things along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, my first documentary, Main Beach, that I shot in Laguna Beach on the basketball courts and the community dynamics there, you know, that was my really first, you know, that was like my first baby. That was the first thing that I was like everything. Editing for the first time, you know, I edited on iMovie. I went in and did everything within that piece, and it was a real honor because I was coming in to UC San Diego as a sophomore, and everyone in the class, they were all seniors, and they had taken all these other prerequisites. The teacher waived all of my prerequisites because of, you know, my background. But, you know, I really went in there, and, you know, you just had to hit the ground running, and you know, she expected the best of you. So that's what I did. So my first piece is really exciting to have that, and that was really when I got a hands-on look at what it really takes to produce a documentary.
All right, you have a production company that you call Vision Quest, right?
Yep, Vision Quest Productions.
Okay, mm-hmm. And a great name, by the way, and certainly a great idea. And I think that all of that, of course, is available right through the website at ElizabethUpton.com. And let's talk about this film Hip Hop that you did.
Yeah,
I've got a lot of listeners to this program are music fans as well, because
we
do a lot of talk, but we play a lot of music on the program as well. So I'm sure some of my listeners would love to hear about your experiences in that particular film.
Well, it was really exciting because while I was at UC Davis, there was a lot of underground hip-hop scenes going on. And I had a lot of friends that had other friends where, you know, people were dancing b-boys and, you know, underground scenes where people were flowing back and forth and battling on the microphone and doing all these things. And I've always loved rap, but in a sense of more underground, that's more of a conscious message, you know. And when I was younger, you know, and you're playing basketball and you're a little kid, you know, you like the gangster rap. But, you know, growing older and learning and actually hearing what people are saying.
And as a woman, I'm sure.
Yeah, of course. And the underground has a lot more of a conscious message, you know. So it was really exciting to connect in with different, you know, hip-hop underground people. And also, you know, my friends Ozo Motley, they're absolutely amazing.
They've played here in town before. I've seen them.
Yeah, they're so great. I actually just saw them. I was filming a bit Earth Dance in Laytonville, Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
And they're good friends of mine. So and it always works out that I have a camera and I'm backstage and they're up on the stage. It's like this weird, uncanny situation where we're always there and I'm always filming. So I keep, every time I see them, I joke that I have to put together something because I have all of this footage of them way back when.
Yeah, they're great. I wish I would have known. I would have grabbed some of their music for tonight. They played Earth Day here a couple of years ago, I think, actually. They were here in town during the Earth Day weekend, and I got to see them at one of the local venues. But, yeah, they're incredible, and they've got a pretty good following here in the Midwest, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah, they're great. They're great. So I have lots of great footage of them. And so, you know, throughout the whole process, it was just really going and experiencing these shows and connecting in with the different artists and putting that together. And then I had other people that I would meet through that, and they would say, oh, I have this footage of this, and I have some footage of that. And, you know, so it was really exciting to collaborate with other artists and then to put that together. And I still have just tons of footage, you know, that I'm almost, you know, as a documentary filmmaker, I think it's a lot about, like, saving or archiving, so down the road that is captured so you can share that, you know, because I love to look at old footage, you know, shot in you know, the 1920s and things that went on around there. So I think that it's exciting to have this footage to be able to share it down the road when things are different, you know. So I have all kinds of great footage of all these amazing underground artists and whatnot. So it was a great experience, you know, all except for one artist. He said he would give me an interview and did not, but that was about it.
Yeah, you know, I run into them too. But was it the music side of it? How much music did you get in the film? And is it a full-length film or is it a short film?
It's a short piece. Because, you know, there's so many different, I mean, you could go in and you could see song after song after song, but I think it's more important. I really like the changing of images so you're able to really get a feel for the whole picture. So it's a short film, and it just goes into a little bit about the underground world and a little bit about, you know, different artists and what they're doing and what their message is. And, you know, just being a fly on the wall, seeing the people that are there, seeing them up there on the stage. A lot of things were difficult with the lighting, because usually in a setting like that, you know, it's really dark lit, and, you know, everyone likes to just be on the stage in the dark kind of thing. So, you know, some of the footage is just, I really like everything to be very professional looking. That's just how I am. And, you know, one of my sticky notes on my computer says, when in doubt, cut it out. So if there's any question, you know, if I'm thinking about something for too long and I'm going, then it's not meant to be in there. So, you know, unfortunately I had to make some decisions just based on the lighting factor. But then again, as I said, I still have all the material and all the footage. So if anyone, you know, really is a diehard fan and they want to see everything, I would still have that. So you would just have to, you know, get a hold of me and whatnot. But,
okay. But
I love music and I love art, so being able to share and promote other artists is, you know, what it's all about as well. So I like being able to share an exchange with other artists.
No doubt. I think that's a great way to look at it because they're the ones that are also helping share your own, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
All right. Well, I tell you what. Let's take a little break here. I've actually see if I can pull something off here. I want to play City of Angels from Ozamotli. And then we'll come back and we'll talk some more, okay?
Okay, great.
All right, everybody. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. On the web at kopn.org, and, of course, my site at MikeHagan, H-A-G-A-N.com. Now, my guest is Elizabeth Upton, and her website is ElizabethUpton.com. And she's a wonderful filmmaker and an artist and a photographer and involved in a whole bunch of cool projects, and we're going to continue to talk with her in just a few minutes here, okay? In the meantime, let's hear a song here from Ozamotli. This one's called City of Angels. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.
Let me tell you a little something about L.A.
I love it!
What you know about my city, that six pack. Hustle to get stacks, fail, get laughed at. Even from here, I hear the chit chat. Grew up, Miracle Mile, fair facts, the tall traps. Hammers and high, alumni, what you know? Damn it, cheese, the cream, JB, the parfait cat. LA, it be the base in the catalyst. Walk, pressing heights, worldwide, back to strangle us. Land of the saint and the land of the wicked. Hollywood, the veil, the mannequin, your cousin. Total duality, every reality. Seven brown shot, minor technicality. Rap pitch, cheating, front page reality. Stanley Miller beating, DA don't wanna touch it. But I love my city, soft yet rugged. Rep LA, I know the angels are loving. Come on.
The beat talk. Then I just fill in the words. This Java Lani that you dealing with. My hood is soft like it's cover lane. So in the bucket I bump behind Mac in the gutter lane. I might rest when I feel a pain. I eat the sorrow, but you heard it before. The sun will come out tomorrow. I'm so insane. But see, we living in LA. And what you thought was the sun was just a flash from the game. You stashing your weed in the passenger seat of the window with the cold feet. Watch your back, little homie. Got a loaded Mac on Figueroa. This got a new girl. It's like he's been a show up. Gangsta, you ain't prepared for the truth. You got him and it's gonna happen to you. They got a deal, how your homie do. Just work the anger. The city I'm from is Los Angeles. Come on.